One of the greatest pedagogical processes is authentic reflection. Having the time to sit and think and reflect around the things that you are learning. Those pieces are so critical to the learning process, but we've created the system where we don't have time. So if we've created the system where we don't have time, we can create a system where we do have time.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. As always, I am excited to talk with another great innovator in that transformative education space. And joining us today again is Dr. Sun Sam, National Director of Partnerships at Big Picture Learning. And Sun, welcome back to Learning Unboxed.
I'm so honored to be back, my friend. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. And just as a reminder for folks who might not recall, or if you're just joining us for the first time today, Big Picture Learning has been reimagining education, creating truly student-centered schools and personalized learning opportunities for young people for close to 30 years, which makes them pros. Their mission is to activate the potential of schools, systems, and education through student-driven, real-world learning with a vision that all students live lives of their own design, nurtured by supportive mentors, meaningful relationships, and equal opportunities to succeed in education, in their careers, and through their civic participation, which today is more important than ever. So thank you for that.
Yes, ma'am.
So last time we chatted, we really dug in a lot about what is big picture learning? What is it all about? What are the things that you feel strongly about and believe? And if you missed that episode, please go back and listen to that. But today I wanted to dig into some of those topics that we just didn't get a chance to really explore. And we're super jazzed to be able to have that conversation. So I would like to start with some questions around the way you think about learner-centered assessment. So if we are thinking about the fact that we're creating new ecosystem opportunities for learning, for being, for changing the world as students, then one of the things that has to come with that is to think about the idea of how we assess what we know and how we get there very, very differently. And it's a pretty controversial conversation for many people.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, being in here for 21 years now, I think when you're part of a system, in a large system, and when the system tells you this is how we do things for a certain amount of years and time, you know, it's pretty easy to sort of go on cruise control and just really lay in the conditions of we've always done this. And so part of it is really our appetite for change and doing what's right for young people. But also, I think folks really have to roll their sleeves up and really think about what's really in the best interest of young people. And for us at Big Picture Learning, we really believe in one student at a time. And we know that standardized testing is one size fits all. And so there's a friction there. So to be super clear, I think standardized tests serves a purpose. What we're saying is just that we want a more inclusive process that really speaks to the entirety of the child and their entire brilliance and their entire gifts that they have to offer this world. And so what we're trying to do is create space for other measures, other learner-centered assessments that really acknowledge the brilliance in all young people. And so over the years, what started off as some holistic sort of frameworks around learning goals, which we call learning goals, which are much more comprehensive and more inclusive. You know, our learning goals around personal qualities, which is really centered around the durable skills and sort of like the social emotional skills that, you know, I mean, there's no argument around that as far as talking to employers, as far as what we need. So we've been working at that for the last 30 years around personal qualities. But then holistically, really thinking about social reasoning, helping young people understand what it means to think like a historian. Empirical reasoning, how do you think like a scientist? quantitative reasoning? How do you think like a mathematician? And really also we've added a couple more too, which is really important from our friends, our network in Australia around knowing how to learn. And lastly, really around communications. So if you were to take a snapshot at that, like those learning goals, they do pull from the core four, English, math, science, and social studies. But whereas the core four, you know, from every single grade, there's about 500 to 700 standards that in any given day in the second week of March you're supposed to be at, which is very, very prescriptive. It's a little bit more holistic. I'm going to use it as an example, but this might trigger some people because I know that certain people feel differently about it. And I'm totally okay with it. I'm not here to advocate. But like when the Common Core came out and they talked about anchor standards, or some states, they call it the power standards. Essentially, that's what we're talking about, where these are these holistic standards that really give space for young people to lead with their learning versus the other way around, leading with standards per se. And so I'll just say this because I'm talking too much, but you would put our work, you know, really, really in the sails of the work that the Aurora Institute has been working for a while on. So the Aurora Institute has been leading the way on a policy level around CompC-based learning in the United States. And I think to date, there is engagement amongst all 50 states at this point around really bringing CompC-based education into the state level from policy statutes, which is really, really exciting to me because it shifts the conversation from solely standards-based seat time, and it moves to skills and sort of mastery over time and growth over time. And so the real challenge for young people now is really to demonstrate what they know over time and creating a menu of options for them to demonstrate what they know. So whether that is performance-based assessments, demonstrations of learning, portfolios, there are multiple measures that we can put into place where young people can really show you, I've quote unquote mastered this competency. So at Big Picture Learning, that's what we've been working on and really leading the way around building individual assessment. We call learner-centered assessments. So yeah, I'll stop there for now because I'll just keep on going if I don't. So
no, it's all good. And you're right. We are collectively working more towards that. And it's refreshing to see that from a policy standpoint that so many states are finally saying, okay, we have to do not just something differently, but we have to recognize that the people that we are serving through this system that we've invested time, energy, effort in putting in place and that we've got policy around, that we have to think about this very, very differently. So it's refreshing. We've got a long way to go. Don't get me wrong.
We very much do.
Absolutely. There's just no question. And there's a lot of pushback and there's a lot of shallowness often to the conversation. It's not unusual. We see that sort of in the first big pushes of some of those things. But I think that we're in a really intriguing space currently because there are so many really great examples of this working and working well, Big Picture Learning being a classic example of this, right? That we know how to do this. We've got schools that have made this transition. We've got kids and families that not only have embraced it, but they're thriving with this as a result, right? So it's I think the tide may be turning on the conversation because honestly, I think policy is hard when you don't have a thing as a policymaker to stand up, to hold up, to sort of parade around the state house and says, this is working, right? Here's a real person that has been impacted by this and I can get behind that.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting to me because, you know, as a wannabe historian myself, that was my major. I love history, but I'll be a wannabe. But there's two, in the last 4 years, there's been two milestone events that I think is really adding to the momentum. One is the pandemic. And in the middle of all that tragedy unfolded, and I don't want to make light of that issue at all, I think we were all figuring out how to, number one, survive in the middle of that environment. But in that survival, so many educators across the nation were thrusted into an environment that they weren't used to. I know I wasn't, you know.
Yeah, they weren't prepared for it. They didn't have the right mindset for it. Right. I mean, the list was long, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
But what it did was it really gave people a frontal real life experience around how do we do education differently.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And it was a great opportunity in many ways.
Yes.
It's a tragedy. Don't get us wrong. But it was an amazing opportunity that was literally thrown on the table.
Right. And the beautiful thing about it, just like our teachers do, they stepped up to the plate and they did what's best for young people. And so in that process, I think a couple of things. One is light bulbs were going off around, oh, okay, like this is hard, you know, but this is different. But what it showed people is just that different wasn't impossible. Different was possible. It's just different. And so if we're thinking about our learners and knowing that they are different learners than just a decade ago, I think we have got to speed up and catch up to them. And so we have to create this flexible, malleable, adaptable system that really meets them where they're at. And so I think that was one where I think folks, the silver lining, if I can say that, was that. And I thought that experience was pivotal for so many educators. The second thing I'll say is really, you know, everyone's talking about it with AI. And, you know, we're still for a couple of years out now, really going to study the sort of significance and the impact of what it's having in the world. But undoubtedly, it's completely changed the way that we as humanity are changing, not even just our young people, right? Like, we know this. And with all the stuff, like, I want to be super clear, like, between the biases and the inaccuracy and the made up stuff, like, all that is real. So I want to be super clear, like, I'm not selling a, there's a lot to figure out with AI. However, I'll share with you one thing. With AI, how is it advancing student-driven real-world learning? How is it advancing one student at a time? How is it advancing our learner-centered system? So I'll share with you a very clear example. So first off, we believe deeply that young people are the curriculum. So we as a society spend billions of dollars, right, doing two things: updating outdated tests that cost millions of dollars by updating curriculum to meet that test. And we pour in millions of dollars of that a year.
Billions.
Billions, yes. Billions of dollars. Where we're at right now is a young person, truthfully, you know, kindergarten, first grade, could slowly be led on a gradual path of an individual path of learning, where the milestones of engagement are in school, outside of school. There's opportunities for them to really, really lead with their interests and their curiosities, in addition with a co-facilitation with their teachers, of course, you know, because it's all age appropriate, you know, I want to say that. But as this gradual release happens with young people from elementary to middle to high school, you have this really, really powerful assistant that is at the beacon, whether that's tutoring, whether that is curating new opportunities, whether that is asking them deep questions for them to be reflective of. But they have this partner now in their journey that can really, really help them identify things that they're interested in, dive deep if they want to go deep, transition into something else if they want to transition into something else. But this entity is now there, whereas just 4 years ago, it wasn't.
Right.
And for us, one area that we continually try to work on as a network is high-quality student-driven real-world learning. And in order to get to that space, right, you need a semi-savvy student, semi-savvy advisor, and a semi-savvy mentor, because that's our trifecta there. So our design is really you curate students' interests, you connect them with a local professional who shares that interest, and you engage them in meaningful work that has impact. That's the secret sauce for big picture learning, right? So those are the three key players. What we've seen over the years is the skill sets to really build high quality learning rests upon those three people. So depending on how strong the mentor is, depending on how strong the student is, depending on how strong the advisor is, really depends on how deep the project goes. But now we have this really, really awesome assistant that can really get us to meaningful, rich, deep projects way quicker than we used to. So for instance, I as an advisor myself, a former, I had 15 students with 15 different projects. And each of those projects had like maybe 5 to 7 mini steps in order to complete those projects. So it's just like a lot for me to manage. In a millisecond, I can really sit down with a student and say, what are you interested in? I can use an analysis of their assets, things that they're really interested in, things that they really want to work on. I can give them the case study of here's their internship, here's the career that they want to pursue. I can talk about and enter information about their mentor. And in a matter of seconds, this assistant will prop up ideas around projects that this young person could do. And then I can offer this to the students. The students can explore it some more. They can choose where they want to go. They could watch, you know, this assistant could recommend videos, websites. Hey, there's other organizations locally that you can, here are the common problems in society that we were trying to work on. And so what you have at our hand now, when we think about like high quality student-driven real world learning, we have this assistant that directly helps our mentors, students, and advisors really come up with high quality projects. So that's one thing to really think of, like these really engaging projects that we can build around and just keep going deeper. But then I can't also not think about, you know, for young people, the one thing they're not short of is incredible ideas.
That is true.
Right. But what they need help with is breaking that big idea into smaller tasks. And this is sort of the cognitive side of really. So now just in a matter of seconds, again, this assistant is just like, what's your project? Okay. Like, here are the steps for us to review in order for you to get there, as far as what I know. Then we sit down with the student, with the advisor, with the mentor, and now we start really talking concretely, like, what's realistic here? What's not realistic? What do we add? What do we take away? And so where we have spent numerous hours of manually, so I was an advisor, I'd be like, okay, my student is interning with a graphic designer. Okay, let me look up.
Yeah, exactly.
Graphic design, like, you know, this whole manual one-off one, like that's how I was as an advisor in the early 2000s, just really trying to make sure that I support my student. You know, they've identified an interest, they got an internship. Here are some glaring sort of problems of practice that we want to dive into. Now I want to be as supportive as possible to sort of cultivate the conversation around projects. And I could do that in mere seconds. And so what we've seen in our network is like that piece has really accelerated us getting closer anyways to higher quality work. And then when we have to break down the pieces and we start thinking about real world standards, academic standards, socio-emotional standards in a really authentic, specific way, we can get there quicker than we've ever had. So that's exciting to me.
Yeah, it's exciting to me too. I love it. And, you know, we, like you, advocate for it all the time. And I would also add, right, you know, you can also take that same incredible assistant that helped you come up with all of those things. They saved you tons of time so you can actually spend more time working on that thing in your mentor or advisor role with that student is, you know, that exact same assistant. You can also ask it, okay, well, here's the project that the kid chose to do. Show me the look force. Show me the things that I, as the advisor or the mentor, need to really be thinking about in terms of this work to help that kid get that much further, that much faster.
Yeah.
You know, it is truly amazing. You know, it can do a tremendous amount of things, right? And it's not going away. That's the other thing. And I always laugh when people start talking about AI, and especially, you know, lots of our schools, you know, they're crafting policies around, because this is nothing but a cheating tool. And just the list goes on and on and on. And I know you've seen these same conversations or even been part of them. And I chuckle. And I shouldn't, right? But I do. I chuckle. I put my anthropology hat on and I'm like, yeah. And we had this same conversation when this crazy thing called the internet showed up. And you're like, oh my gosh, we're not going to use those encyclopedias in the library again? Oh, the world is going to end.
Wait, I'll go one more, one more, a little bit older. The same conversation happened with the calculator.
Of course it did. Yes.
It was the end. It was end of mathematical thinking.
Oh my gosh.
When the calculator came up.
It was nothing but cheating on the horizon. On the horizon, right? I mean, it literally, this is nothing new. It's just a new version, right, of the evolution of human society and that intersection with technology. And it's going to happen again and again and again. And we fight it instead of embracing it. I mean, the reality of it is we can't deny our kids AI because these kids are going into jobs where AI is going to be just part of the foundation of their work. There's an expectation that our kids are completely comfortable. They're cognizant. They've got the ethics around it, everything. How are they going to learn that if we don't let them have the chance to explore it?
Well, truthfully, whether we allow them or not, as they've always done, they've led their way.
Of course they will.
Yeah, you know, so whether we allow them or not, they're using it. and they're adapting it and on all sorts of level outside of school learning, really to pursue their interests, you know, the things that they're truly like really, really passionate, what they're passionate about. So yeah, I'll circle back to say that competency-based learning now, like what's really interesting is that we can leverage a framework around the skills that are most important to a community. So making sure that that's aligned to the profile of a graduate. Each community is different, so the priorities are different. And so based on the profile graduate, communities can create their competency-based framework around the skills that are really, really important to them by the time the young people leave. And then what's really interesting to me is just that now we could have a real authentic dialogue leveraging AI as well in assessing students' skills and masteries. Like we can really have an authentic conversation of just like, what is this mastery of this competency? And young people could really, through performance-based assessments, such as a portfolio, such as, you know, exhibitions, like those are clear ways and pathways and structures with which young people can really demonstrate what they know. And it's a very interdisciplinary way to do it, which we know is literally this is how the world works. I mean, quite rarely do we see things happen in singular fashion nowadays. It never really did, but now more than ever, like everything is interconnected. And when we try to approach our assessments, because assessments move practice, right? Mm-hmm. When we approach it in a very singular way, I think we're missing the most important person, and that's the young person.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
And you know, when given the opportunity, I would argue, when given the opportunity, and I realize this is my opinion, but kids will outperform, out-amaze, out-wow every single time. Every single time, right? I mean, honestly, I think that one of the single biggest impediments to student success is the adults in the room, right? If we would just get out of the way, right, and let them go and let them lead, you know, and truly mentor and truly advise them in a very respectful and with the outcome in mind that, you know, helping that kid find their greatest version of themselves, right? It's just astounding. My interview earlier in the week that I did was with a school that allows kids to write their own transcripts.
Ooh.
Awesome. I was so blown away. I can't wait to dig into that. But it's literally what you're talking about, right? And it's just that one step further. They're like, yeah, we don't need to do anything that's grade-based because you've demonstrated everything through mastery and competencies. And oh, by the way, we want you to be empowered to write your transcript.
Yeah.
Super crazy awesome.
Can you imagine the depth of reflection that young person would need to be engaged in order to like the self-reflection around accomplishment, the self-reflection around perseverance, the self-reflection around how far I've come and where I need to go. That's another piece to this where I really feel that there's this huge missing component. Like when we think about the need for learner-centered assessments is really the real lack of true reflection for young people, which is sorely missed in this traditional standards-based assessment where you get a grade, you know, and if you have time to reflect on it before moving on to the next thing, maybe you'll talk about like concepts that you miss, but concepts that are not learning, like, you know what I mean? Those are two very different things. But that's a piece that I really, really, in a larger context, talk to people when you think about like learning in general, like one of the greatest pedagogical processes that as part of the learning process is authentic reflection. Like truly, truly having the time to sit and think and reflect around the things that you are learning and where you need to go and what you've accomplished so far. Like those pieces are so critical to the learning process. But where we're at right now, we've created the system where we don't have time. So if we've created the system where we don't have time, we can create a system where we do have time.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I love that.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, really the power is in us. So more than anything, I hope folks that hear this podcast, there is no singular way to like solve this dilemma, you know? And I also want to give credence to every community is different. So it looks different. So there is no, you know,
there's no one size fits all and there is no off the shelf. Just let right. that idea go. Right.
Right.
And if we could let those two ideas go, it means that we have to go back to culturally relevant and locally derived. And if we can embrace that, I think, again, you know, my opinion, but if we can embrace that, it means that we have to design the thing we need.
Right.
We have to. Otherwise, we've set it up to fail before we even started.
Yeah. And so, like, the biggest push for me or level of urgency is the young people are making it clear to all of us right now that they're not going back.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
whatever measure you want to take a look at, whether it is absenteeism, whether it is the sense of belongingness that they're craving, in my personal opinion, it's always been there, but the manifestation of it is much larger now, where young people have realized that there are different ways to do this. And they're not convinced that sitting inside a classroom for 60 minutes, rotating that six times a day for 40 weeks is the only way to do this.
Correct.
You know, they are super, super clear that that is not the only pathway and they're looking for other pathways.
And that is one of those beauties, right, of social media, of the world being such an open book. You know, we can argue all we want about all the negative impacts that come from this, and there are a fair number of those, right? But there's also this lens into what is possible. And kids have embraced that. They've said, no, we don't have to do it this way anymore. In fact, we don't want to, or we're going to refuse to. We want something more. It's visible to them in ways that it didn't used to be. Just the ability to get information and then to be able to process and information and understand it, or to at least say, I want that thing. I might not fully get it, but I think I want that is definitely a different piece. You know, it was really interesting because yesterday, actually, I was working with a group of our high school kiddos here in the lab. And we do this advisory project called the Cultural Impact Project. And I've been doing this every year for years. And it changes every year because the kids are different and the things that they're interested in. And you know, long way of saying, you know, the gist of it is these kids are in a healthcare pathway. So many of them aspire to be doctors, nurses, technicians, you name it, but they're going to be serving patients in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
We all know tremendous job potential, career possibility within that field. We have an aging population. There's only going to be more of us that need more and more. So many, 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 many jobs.
Hello.
Yeah, exactly. And yet we also know, right, that the path forward to learn the skills I need to be able to do great at that job doesn't allow a lot of time for me to really invest or spend time, back to your point, of self-reflection or understanding myself or being a better version of my own humanity, right? So that I can serve the others within humanity. So we do all these different activities along the way during this program, really to get the kids to think about those things. And so yesterday was my favorite day. When we do this project, I do something called silent observation because it's so wickedly painful for the kids. They hate it. They hate it. They hate it. They hate it. Yet you can watch the growth happening literally within a 30-minute period of time, right? Because the kids have to sit and stare at another kid silently for 30 minutes or for 5 minutes at a go, right? And they have to write down everything they can observe about that person. So the first time they do it, and they do it two or three different times with different people, right? And here's my whole point of this in sharing this story is because this is what happens. It happens every single time. So the first time the kids do it, they're going to write down things like, you know, female, male, gender neutral. These kids today, they'll come up with all kinds of things, which we love, right? You know, they've got brown hair. They've got a yellow shirt on. You know, he wears glasses. You know, all that kind of stuff, right? Pretty basic stuff. But then the next time when they have to do it again, they'll capture all of that. But then they will go to, oh, and he has, you know, some kind of weird rash above their left eyebrow. Yeah. Or, you know, there's a symbol on the necklace that she's wearing. I wonder what that means.
Yeah.
You know, and so by the time they've got, you know, through two or three cycles of this, they're telling me stuff or they're making assumptions or asking themselves questions about these individuals that are based on things that they want to know, not just what they see.
Right.
Right. That's really, really powerful sort of space. And like, you know, I can't test for that. And why should I?
Right. I don't think you should. I think that is absolutely beautiful. For a whole host of reasons. I think really it just shows you what young people are capable of.
And you're not teaching them anything other than look deeper. I mean, that's my prompt to them in between each rotation. Okay, you just did it this way. Awesome. Now look deeper. What do you need to know now?
On so many levels, all the lessons that you're talking about, but then also standing in our humanity, loving thy brother and thy sister. And like, just, there's so many lessons, you know, in that one 30-minute segment that you just spoke of right now, but also just seeing other people. We live in such a high-paced world and also a digital world. And because of it, in a lot of ways, we also live in a very divided world where we don't see each other anymore.
And we certainly don't understand each other anymore. And that's also part of what that sort of lesson or the way that I've crafted with the teacher that I work with, that she and I have crafted this very deliberately, right? Because, you know, one of the things that I tell these kiddos is, do you know what the average amount of time that a physician gets to spend with a patient? They throw out all kinds of numbers. And I'm like, 8 minutes. 8 minutes. 8 minutes from somebody walking in, you're chit-chatting just for a second, because everybody wants to do that. That's human nature, to what's going on with you. And then you have to be able to take all the information you have and come up with a plan for another individual, not for yourself.
Right. That directly has to impact their health in some way.
Yeah. And it has the potential to impact everything, not just their health, their family interactions, their environment. I mean, like, you know, you have to know so much, and you have to know deeply, and you have to know quickly. And you also have to know when to pause and step back and say, I don't have enough.
Right.
Because you are recognizing deeply somebody else's humanity.
Right.
That's what I think the world of education for our kids today should be about, how to be better humans. And through being a better human, I think that kids can and will learn everything they need to know and so much more.
That was deep, sis. Very, very deep. But it's so true. And I have nothing else to say, but I absolutely agree with you. I think the humanity piece, and it's just interesting. Like in some spaces, the moment that you talk about humanity, anything that shifts the conversation away from academics is not important. But we've seen time and time again that when you leave out the humanity, academics and everything else is impacted.
Well, it is. And I guess I would argue, sort of a closing thoughts here, because I want to be super mindful of our time, but is that I do not see how we can successfully educate a whole child to go out into the world and to be functional and to contribute to society and to be active agents for good, right? If we don't, in fact, aspire to educate the entirety of that being.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, coming full circle back to how we started this conversation today, these kids, they're so incredible. They're powerful. They're smart. They're creative. They can, in fact, sort of lead their own journey if we will get out of the way.
Right. I'll end with a thought. This is from Elliot, my mentor, and I might be messing this up, but I think the context of it is super clear. We started this conversation talking about learner-centered assessments. Mm-hmm. So assessments, we believe, should really assess how young people are smart, not if they are smart.
Correct.
We have a system that's set up right now to measure if they're smart. And I think that is a huge, huge mistake. because, again, to your point, I think we've said it in the beginning and throughout, like, young people are brilliant. And if we truly believe that every single one of them are brilliant, then we need a system to showcase how brilliant they are. And that's the difference between learner-centered assessments, that they are directly built to showcase how brilliant young people are.
I love that.
Yeah, I'll leave that there.
It's the perfect way to end this conversation. And once again, I'm afraid we're going to have another one.
Yes! So good. We're going to do a series.
We're going to do a series. I think so. Oh, my gosh. So thank you so much, Son, for joining us today, taking time out of your day to continue the conversation with us. Grateful.
This is pure joy, my friend. Thank you so much. This is so much fun. I appreciate just being here with you.
Oh, I appreciate you so much. Yes, thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.